This is the Office 365 service management session. I'll be talking about how Microsoft and for with Office 365 we do change management and communicating to you guys. Also talking about how we manage service incidents and where you can get involved. But I had a question. Could you guys help me? I want you to just call out some companies, online services that you use in your personal life or with work or whatever, that you feel that they communicate outages well, the way that you want to see that. All right. InterNAP? Okay. Awesome. Chase Bank? I use Bank of America, and I've had a similar experience where they've had an outage on their ATMs and their online service and whatnot and got communicated to. How about on change? Like when something is changing with the service and how they communicate to their customers on what that change looks like. Is there someone that stands out above the rest? We got a Google up here. Okay. All right. It just helps because, you know, we're growing. We're always changing with Office 365, and that's going to be part of the conversation here. So it helps to get a perspective. And I always find in with those questions that it's financial services. You know, it's going to be American Express. It's going to be Chase, Bank of America, things like that, where I always hear. I also find, as it goes with change with airlines, you know, when a flight's swapped out or gets delayed, you know, I get notified on my phone, I get a voicemail message, things like that, and it's kind of the way I want to see it. So where something changes, I get it through the channel that I want to be communicated with. So anyway, my name is Jim Lucy. I'm on the Office 365 marketing team. I've got a pretty broad history at Microsoft, a couple decades, and I spent a lot of time in support. I did support for Exchange back to 5.0 and up to probably 2000 timeframe. Then I made a swap over to kind of the product group doing more program management with Exchange, and then I swapped over into the marketing org to help, you know, build the value and stuff like that, and also a functional role learning more about marketing. So I'm now on the marketing team, and my role specifically is on the service management team, where I personally own what you see in Message Center, which we'll talk about. I'm perfectly capable of talking about all that we're going to have here, but as we get the conversation going, you guys know where my expertise lies. This is what I have as the general agenda today, where we're talking about how you can run Office 365 and helping you be successful, helping you be aware and empowered of the change that we have, understanding our life cycle of how we handle incidents when there's an outage, and just kind of keeping you informed of resources and tools that are available to you that are out there. I fully expect that this conversation will get into very specific changes that we've done, very specific outages, and so I'll take it as it goes. I think I probably have 45 minutes of material and can handle it. And where we can't cover it in here, we have Ask the Experts right after, so I'm happy to take this next door as needed. So first off, some of the things, what we've heard about from customers moving to the cloud and some of the challenges and concerns. And change usually is kind of right at the top of that list, being able to adapt and manage the rate of change that an online service kind of pushes out to the service. I know as an IT pro, you're probably used to a lot of control. You're used to testing, putting it into the service, and then communicating to your users and rolling it out at that rate. So there's a bit of loss of control when you're moving to the cloud on the types of changes that are coming out. How does support work? What happens during an outage? What do I do? Do I just sit on my hands? I'm used to actually turning knobs and pulling out tapes and putting them in the system and, you know, recovering from backup. I'm used to being involved. I'm used to being on the phone with Microsoft until this thing is resolved. So what is my role now during these outages? You can see I'm not going to read through all the list here, but the way I like to think about it is these things are all grouped around change, you know, having trust in Microsoft that, you know, they're doing the right thing managing my service, and also being able to have some type of control with Office 365. And so with that, I just wanted to take another step back and ask an open-ended question. Is there anything concerning with the cloud that we don't have listed on here that maybe we should have listed on here? Okay. We don't do backups with Office 365. We replicate and have multiple copies of the data. So, got it.
Communication, is that on there?
Communication in the frame of.
When y'all change something, we don't always know it
until
after it's happened.
Got it. Yeah. So us, Microsoft, communicating to you on what changes happen. The whole point of this session, so fair enough.
How to deal with answering audits.
Okay.
About various types of data.
Okay, being able to handle audits.
That's some things where they say, yeah, that's going to be fixed sometime in the future. They close my incident, and I never know, except if it pops up randomly, that it's been fixed.
Okay. And this one was a Microsoft support issue, I assume. Said that this will be solved at some point in the future, and then the case is closed, and you never hear.
Yeah,
that's actually quite interesting. Like when we say, hey, we're working on this.
Yep, we're done.
Yeah, and being able to tie our Office 365 roadmap back to a support incident and having it auto-notify you. Thanks for the idea. Okay. All right. So it is dealing with change, kind of having trust in the service, and having that ability to have control of what's going on in the cloud. And those are kind of tied to what we feel our cloud principles are. We do maintain an evergreen service. Basically, that is, we're versionless, we're always running, we're always updating the service, and we can promise you that. We're doing monthly updates, just like Michael Atala talked about this morning in the keynote. We're always updating. We're on a one-month sprint dev cycle where we're just pushing out small updates on a more on a quicker basis. One of our principles is also trust and security. The session right before this was about privacy, security, and compliance, and so forth. If you didn't see that, it was a good session. That anything we do, we want to make sure that security is top of mind, that you guys have trust that we're maintaining the service the right way and keeping a highly available service. And then finally, we know that being able to configure things is important. You don't have the ability to twist every knob like you did when you managed the servers yourself, but there are a fair number of knobs in the cloud that you still can manage, and we know that you want to do this. And so when we're building new features, like say we roll out Delve, do I want to roll out Delve? Give me that option. I want to roll it out to half my organization, but not the other half. You know, give me that kind of flexibility. So we definitely have that in our head as we build features. We can't do it for every single feature, but we do try to where we can. And so as we look at in the cloud, kind of the difference with on-premises, you know, it is different than running on-prem. But a lot is the same. We're trying to take away a lot of the day in and day out mundane stuff, you know, the twists and knobs. Like, we're making it easier for you guys to manage the service, to help your users be more productive. You can still put some users on one plan and other users on a different plan. Maybe if we're dealing with an airline, you put the flight attendants on like a kiosk web-only kind of experience, but you put your home office folks on, you know, the rich desktop client capabilities. We do have hybrid capabilities. So if you want to manage identity and directory and so forth on premises, by all means, go for it. And you can configure hybrid federation, set up all that stuff with Office 365. Obviously, there's any number of other sessions that you can go to get to a deeper level on those topics. But we are managing the cloud to be highly scalable, to be secure, to build that trust. And so there's plenty of opportunity for you to continue to manage and configure the service where it makes sense. So we have these three kind of areas. You're considering purchasing, the purchase process, deploying. This session is completely focused around that box. What happens after I'm done deploying and all my users are up to speed and have email and they have their phones configured for, you know, sync? Okay, now what? Now we live on the service. And that deployment piece is a fraction of history. Once you get up to speed, you have this whole life after that where, okay, what now? And that's what I want to focus this session around. We have this operate phase, and I think Michael Atala had a brief look at this slide earlier this morning. So you have this operate, this run state phase, where you have change management and communication, service health. You have incidents that, you know, that might pop up, and how do you manage those? There's maintenance, monitoring, performance checks, things like that, and then support itself. Beyond that, since we're releasing new features to help improve productivity, how do I effectively roll those out to my organization and get them to adopt it? How do I extend the capabilities of what I have and integrate into my line of business apps and so forth? So there's going to be usage, adoption, and, you know, development capabilities that you're going to want to add into your experience. All to help empower effective IT admins, help engage and have productive users, and just to create an overall great service experience. This session is not going to be all of that. I'm going to focus this session on these two areas. We're going to be talking about change management and communications and what we do. And we're going to talk about service health and incidents and what that means. So that's pretty much the rest of the session is going to be broken up half and half on those two boxes. And great animation to highlight. Yes, it's this next section. All right, so talking about change and communications, I want to help you guys understand what our principles are to talk about service incidents and service updates. I want to talk about our approach and how we are going to do communication and what you guys can expect. And then just show some of the tools and capabilities that are available for you guys to take advantage of. So talking about those update principles, I talked about our evergreen experience before, and again, it's a continuous update cadence. We're always going to be updating. We may not communicate on every little nook and cranny that we roll out, and I'll talk about that a little bit more, but we will be communicating to you guys about change, minor, major, you name it. Also, as I said before, we want to build trust into this. We want you guys to trust that we're communicating the right stuff to you. If we're not getting it right, we want to hear and we want to get better about this. This is a journey. This is where we aspire to, what our principles are that are driving us to build that trust. And then the last one, which I already kind of touched on, is just listening to you guys. There's a number of places that we get feedback from. This being one of those, but we do, and I do have a slide to talk about it, going through support on Yammer groups, on conferences and community forums, things like that. So we have this kind of concept in the old world talking about waves of releases. And what we had in the old world is every 18 to 36, sometime, you know, 3 year release cycles that we release a major version that has a ton of features in it, and you've got to communicate, you've got to test, deploy, look at all those features, communicate all the features to your users, and then poof, go off, use it, and be productive. That's kind of where we have been. And what invariably happens, maybe the 3 years is too quick for some companies, that those companies would go and skip a major update. So they're now, when they go to deploy an update, you know, a version, you know, two versions from now, they've got a bigger mass of features that they're going to deploy. There may be migration or other factors that weren't planned through a skip level upgrade, where it's just a much bigger impact to the organization. So where we have these wave releases before, we're looking to move now with Office 365 just more continuous updates. What Mike Atala was talking about this morning on these monthly sprints, smaller, quicker features, that it's this world. Kind of reminds me of The Price is Right, that little mountain climber guy. I thought about adding in the music in the background. Yodelay, yodelay, yodelay. You know, but the game was actually called Cliffhanger, and I didn't think that it probably sounded great with Office 365, so I chose not to put it on here. Anyway, the continuous updates, while the rate of change happens much quicker and it seems overwhelming, they're smaller in nature over time, and just it's part of the experience and is meant to help the users be more productive and just built into the process. So looking at this basic graph of all the changes that we did over the last basically 18 months, I think it was till June. Michael had a similar slide where it kind of flew out at you this morning, but this is just a tip of the iceberg of all the changes we've had in the last 18 months. What you don't see on here is Delve, the modern groups, and those attachments that he demoed this morning. That's all happened since June. The iOS and Android app, Office app updates, the online apps. I mean, everything. They just keep coming. And for us to maintain the slide on a daily basis is just as daunting. So anyway, we are an evergreen service. We have continuous updates, and we're just providing that stuff. We're going to be updating the service very regularly. Okay. So now I want to talk about the actual communication. And I'm happy if you guys just throw your hands up. I'm happy to take questions as we go. I'll take a break right after I talk about change and give an opportunity to you guys to digest and before I jump into service incidents. So. This is how we kind of break up and categorize the types of change that we communicate. Ongoing functionality updates, platform updates that we do in the background, any changes that we make to our system requirements. We made one not too long ago about IE8, browser connecting to Outlook web app, and then any unexpected service incidents. If we dig, you know, peel the onion just a little bit on that. As I go through here and look at these different updates, the functionality updates, we kind of see two groups in there. The feature updates at the top is really what you'll see every day. It's part of our Office roadmap, which I'm going to show you in just a moment. Major UI updates, our app launcher, things like that, that we'll communicate on our public roadmap. We'll also communicate through the message center on the day that feature is released. This light bucket called new introductions, these are things that Microsoft holds back for a big PR moment. Maybe we feel that these features are big enough that we want to hold them back and get a little bit of airtime about it, so to say. It might be part of a bigger launch, a bigger wave of groups of features that are coming out. So a lot of the Office for Android and Office for iPhone, or Office for iOS updates that we did recently were part of that in this bucket right here. In that case, you won't see them on the public roadmap necessarily if we hold them for the day of, or we could have announced it a year in advance before that feature. Whenever we announce that thing, we'll put it on the roadmap, but sometimes it could be the day of. I guess the Microsoft band might be one of those things. It's big to Microsoft, and we announced it the day of that it was released and available in the stores. We will have those types of things for Office 365 as well. And again, we will communicate those through the Message Center when that's available. For those, we would put it on the roadmap as soon as we announce it. So let me think of one that we announced way in advance, Delve. We announced Delve at the SharePoint conference at the beginning of the year, but we didn't start releasing it till a month or so ago. It was on our public roadmap a long time in advance. Where I'll talk about the public roadmap, it's usually like 30 to 90 days in advance of when things get on there. But this new introductions thing is a little bit special group. Okay, this one's probably the most interesting, and we could talk about this for a long time, are disruptive changes. And disruptive changes are things that have a significant impact on the end user experience, a significant impact on your organization. And so we have system requirements here. It's not always with system requirements, but we will and really strive to communicate those 12 months in advance via the Message Center, could be via a blog, things like that. We're doing right now the SharePoint Online site upgrades. We're upgrading them from 2010 to 2013. And because we don't know all the customization and stuff that people have done on their 2010 sites, we are just considering that to be disruptive. So we communicated a long time ago that we're doing these upgrades. And actually, we have unique capabilities in Message Center where we're doing like 30-day reminders. Hey, your upgrade started. Hey, your upgrade's complete. You know, we have a whole big chain of Message Center notifications that can go in for that kind of disruption. Then there's the general configuration changes. When we're doing something that's going to impact you, maybe the DNS record change is needed, auto discover configuration. I think one that we have in there right now, which I'll show you, is SSL 3.0, support for SSL 3.0 going away. We're going to communicate that as much time in advance as we have the information for it. It'll easily be at least 30 days. You know, if we know a change is coming, we'll push it out just to make sure we give at least 30 days, but it could be up to a year where we communicate some of those changes as needed. The only time that we would do something day of you need to change is if we had like a security, there was a security risk attached to it, something to that effect. And then for infrastructure improvements, a lot of this is around the service health dashboard and the planned maintenance window therein. So this is kind of how we bucketize and categorize the service updates and communication and what we are striving to meet on the time frame for communicating those changes to you. Again, on disruptive change, I'll let you guys read this. This is literally copied and pasted from the support.microsoft.com/lifecycle. Disruptive change is one, to avoid significant degradation to the normal operation of the online service. Okay, where we're listening. So we do talk to customers all the time, one-on-one, in groups, at conferences, whatnot. But we do hear feedback and do update capabilities as we see opportunities there. One example here is there was a big request to have native PDF capability in SkyDrive, which is now OneDrive. So we added that in. There is a little send a smile capability inside the Office 365 portal and the products, where you can, if you like something, send feedback on it. We got a significant amount of feedback on the ability to add attachments to an email message, in like Word or Excel or things like that, to send as an attachment. It was a bit confusing. The old way is right above, and we simplified it by providing just a share link instead of save and send. Because you have save and send, and then it's like check for issues. That doesn't sound like it. Just it made sense to update something like that. And then finally, we do listen to, we talk with support on a regular basis and aggregate support issues. We do have monthly reviews with our support teams to find out what top issues are. You'll see things in the portal, in the support bucket, in the portal. It will update with recommended content based on issues as we see trends in support volume. There was probably still is, I'm not 100% confident, the like being able to change passwords for users. And, you know, just how do you do it? What is the process? The number of support calls on it was crazy. And one of the options, this UI right here used to only be in PowerShell. So a simple thing, well, not so simple, but one of the things that we could do to help reduce the support calls is like add a UI in to help that. And so, again, we want to reduce the overall cost of the service. And if we're finding something that is, you know, a bunch of calls are coming in, bad experience for you, bad for us, let's fix some of those top issues. So we do aggregate and look at support issues and look for opportunities as needed. Okay, I wanted to jump and just show some of these things and some of the tools and capabilities. You guys likely have already seen this, but we're going to check it out again. Michael Atala went through and breezed through some of these this morning. This is our Office 365 roadmap. It is office.com WAC roadmap, not roadmap.office.com like Michael said this morning. That here we're listing what's launched, what is coming, what we have already begun rolling out, what we have in development, which we see coming down the road, and items that we've canceled. If I go look at rolling out, I can see a number of these things. We see Delve in here. Delve is unique because of the newness of Delve and guidance from the engineering team. Our actual rollout for Delve is going to be over almost a year, from when the first tenant gets it to when the last tenant will get it. And so there will be improvements to the feature along the way, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it'll sit in this rolling out bucket for some time. And we are working to communicate via Message Center when we begin rolling it out. You may not have it yet. You may get it in 3 months. So in that 3 month, you'll get a Message Center post that'll say it's coming for your organization. So we can target those Message Center posts. What we do have on the roadmap here is there's usually a link. This one actually takes you to a blog. No, that looks like a technical article. But usually they're to a blog if we have kind of already communicated, we've announced something. Anyway, this is usually the features that are in here on the roadmap are 30 to 90 days in advance of us starting to roll it out. So just to give you some idea, we don't have a set time frame for that. If we did announce something a longer time in advance, we'll just add it on here so you'll just see it a little bit longer. Do you guys like thumbs up, thumbs down on just having a roadmap where you can see what's coming to give you guys a forward view into what we're building for Office 365? Thumbs up? Okay. couple of thumbs up.
Pam, is this just specifically for education or not?
Yeah, that's a great question. Is this list specific for education or not? Or could I? Yeah, we've gotten a number of feedbacks on how to improve this site. How we can tailor it to a specific tenant is where we want to get to. So not just education, but you may be a higher ed tenant where a feature might be unique for that that tenant. Our goal, if there would be a goal here, would be to get this in the portal. So it is, you're authenticated and you can see, everyone can go here and see what's coming, but you can go in your portal and see what's coming for you. So that's perfect world. We've had a number of requests here. Can I set an RSS feed so I see a change when it happens? Let's see, what else have we received feedback on? Can I see this by workload? Exchange versus link versus SharePoint? Just due to the nature of features that are, they're going to be more cross-suite instead of very siloed to a specific workload, it doesn't always make sense. It's like, yeah, we could probably put one that's unique to Exchange, but then what category do we put it in if it's across? So anyway, we're happy with this roadmap. We've gotten a lot of great feedback that we have a roadmap, and we're going to continue to iterate on this roadmap and make it more relevant and important to you guys. The next resource, which I consider this my morning newspaper, because it's always live, it's always changing. Sometimes a feature rolls out that I just find out about, and that's not good because I need to know what features are coming so that I can communicate in the message center for our tenants. That doesn't happen often, but it has happened. So anyway, we have our blog, and you just kind of keep up on what's going on in Office 365 land, and you know, you can tailor it to if you're focused on, you know, OneDrive, that's all you really care about, then you can look at all the blog posts that are specific to that workload. So anyway, you can set your own filters. It's pretty rich in here. I like this UI better than we had the last one. It actually helps me. Okay. And, oh, actually, I did want to show one other thing in just a second. Okay. And then the last place I wanted to show when we're talking about change is the message center itself. How many of you guys have logged in and seen the message center? Okay, at least once in your life? All right. Okay. If not, I encourage you to go in there. I encourage you to look at it regularly, because what we do in here, that we communicate to you when something has changed. We've begun rolling it out, and usually we communicate in there and we point to a very specific source piece of content that we want to get you to. Like, for example, let me find one in here. Oh, and you can group on prevent or fix issues, plan for change, stay informed. So in this particular one, or plan for change, we have, we're disabling SSL 3.0 starting December 1st, that's today. If you opened up this Message Center post, come on. Information superhighway is, all right, we'll go back. All right, well, I'll wait for that, the squirrels to run around in there. So we also have something that I wanted to show you. Like when we launch a new feature, we're trying out something new, and I'd love your input to find out if this is helpful or not. We're working to provide email templates that you can send to your users to make it easier for you to roll out new features. And I was going to show you one. Actually, I have it open. The app launcher that we just released about a month ago, that's a completely different change in the UI of the Office portal that we built an email template and the, sorry, where is, there it is. So we built an email template to help you, and so this is what it looks like. Kind of elegant. We had a designer help us build this email, and you know, it just has three high-level things These learn more buttons actually will take you to content, maybe a video on how it works, maybe it's a help article, or help them get to the place that they can find out what that means. It's not a really long article or email, but you can also change this. Like in the bottom of this, add logo here. You can put your IT logo or your company logo. You can even add in your IT website, your intro website. You know, whatever you want to do to tailor this email, we've just built the template for you. You guys go ahead and send it. We just want to make sure you get to the right place. And go ahead and send it. But, okay.
So are those available now?
There are a few available now. And we just created one on Delve. We are creating one on the Modern Groups. And so we're kind of starting off and just, you know, working through, because it's a bit of work to create them. So we're looking at how it'll scale and to what level of change, because not every change is considered equal. If we add bold into an online app, which is already there, but you got my point, right?
So where are they now?
Success Center. And have you heard of the Success Center? Okay, I do have a slide at the end. It's success.office.com if you want to go there right now. We just launched that at the end of October, and it is to help you guys roll out adoption across Office 365. And the primary scenarios on there, there's five of them, to help get configured with email and calendar, to help get started on Yammer, to help, you know, sync with OneDrive. There's some basic usage scenarios that we want to help you guys get users more productive with Office 365. So those are there, but they're kind of cross suite scenarios. These feature specific ones we're just dipping our toes into, and there's only two of them up there now. So you can dabble around that site while I talk up here.
One thing I wanted, maybe I'm missing it, but I would love to be able to get an email when y'all post something to my message center.
Yeah, we hear that. And actually, you want, if I could simplify it more, you want to be communicated the way you want to be communicated to. If you want a text message, send me a text message. If you want voicemail every time, God forbid, you know, send me voicemail. We definitely hear that. We're trying to work through the challenges to build at scale and be able to communicate, because an email, it takes time to build it, to send, put it, because there's so many laws around sending email.
Tell me, new message in the message center.
Yes. No, that's, yeah, that's totally, no, that's totally where I'm going. Like, hey, we've rolled out something new. Go check the message center. Yes. We want the message center to be our primary channel for communicating that, and all these other things in the future, the email, the SMS, text, voicemail, that it'll all get you back to the message center. Yes. I see a world that way as well. By the way, here's the App Launcher Message Center post. Oh, dear. All right. Okay. Anyway, trust me. I showed you the tip, the success.office.com. It's there, I promise. The last place resource I wanted to show you is service descriptions. How many of you guys are familiar with the service descriptions? Okay. It's on TechNet. Under Office 365, it's literally the very first bucket for service descriptions. For every workload that we have in there, there's basically a feature level checkbox of all the things that are available in Office 365. Yes, you can route and set rules on email going through the transport. Great, check. It's literally that level with the little one-line description of what that feature is. You'll even be able to tell what service plans and offerings that feature is available in. There are enough in here that it doesn't make sense to go through all of them. One in particular under the platform, we do have our system requirements. I did allude to that under our disruptions category of change. System requirements here. where we list what those system requirements are for Office 365 based on browser, operating system, Office version. Clicked too many times. So in here, anytime we make a change in here, we're going to communicate that via the Message Center. Anytime we make a change on our Trust Center, so the previous session before this, he probably went a lot through the Trust Center. Anytime we make a change to like the data maps, like where data is physically located, if you're in Brazil and you're on SharePoint, where is my data physically located? If we make a change to any of that, we're going to communicate it via the Message Center as part of our change policy. And the great thing about Message Center, I don't know if I said this, we can target a message down to the tenant level, down to a very specific customer. If we're seeing a, and we've had this a couple times over the last month, where we have automation in our systems that can see when messages are backing up in the queue to a specific, to specific IP addresses, we know those IP addresses are tied to tenant X, and then we'll be able to communicate right to that specific tenant to say, hey, messages are backing up in the queue on our side. It's a problem you need to fix. Like, we can't contact these IP addresses, and we'll list these three IP addresses. So, hey, they're probably off. Who knows? Maybe they made a DNS record change that those record, those servers appeared offline. Question in the back. Yeah, on those prevent or fix issue type messages, we are working. That's like our first step into sending emails also. And we'll send to the primary and alternate email address of anyone in the admins group for the Office 365 tenant. So we are doing that now for those specific scenarios. But yeah, we want to make that bigger anytime we have change to communicate via these mechanisms also. Okay. Great questions. So just a quick summary on change. Just understanding our principles. We're always making change. We want to build trust with you guys. You're on the service for a long time, hopefully, that you guys just expect a certain way of us doing business and communicating to you guys. We're going to be doing stuff quickly, so you're going to need to embrace that and understand how, and then work into your whatever your company communication model, how you communicate changes to your users. Just stay current. We got the Office Roadmap, the blog, the Message Center as primary channels for us to communicate to you guys, and then we're always listening. We have the Office 365 IT Pro Network on Yammer. That is a great place. There's a group in there called Change Alerts, which is quite active. So we watch that every day, even though we don't respond to everything that we see in there. We do listen, and we are watching, and we definitely see what you guys want. And before I jump in, moving from change management comms over to service health and incidents, I just want to take a break and to see if there's any other questions you guys had about how we do change, how we communicate it, your expectations.
Okay, so ProPlus got pushed out for students to be able to self-register. We got the notification on September 1st, and it was enabled on September 22nd. And it was enabled telling us that we could go and turn it off.
Correct. Got it.
So it was very frustrating because we ended up having 300 students who did it. Well, actually, it was some type of robo thing that did it. And we only found out about it because we actually had one student call our help desk.
Okay.
So we didn't know the data was going to come out. We didn't know, I mean, we went all over all this on the Yammer site.
Mm-hmm.
But today is the date I've been told, but I'm not sure. And so those kinds of things.
What's your name?
Jody Gillett, University of Houston.
Okay. Jody, the change that she was highlighting and summarizing is we rolled out just for academic institutions and not for all academic institutions that where they were licensed to have Office Pro Plus for their faculty and staff, we are basically giving Office 365 Pro Plus subscriptions to all their students and allowing them to, or actually they get it anyway, but we're just making it easier for those students to sign up and self-register and install it. Yes, so she does say the easier. That when we communicated, we tried to communicate enough in advance before we launched to give at least a warning, like it's happening. Because we know IT admins and there's a bit of, you know, you guys want to control rollouts and things like that. That in this case, we gave options in the FAQ that we attached to the Message Center post that help explain how they can turn it off if they don't want their students to self-sign up for Office subscription. And she had a couple issues with it. I didn't know about those, so I'll go back and the guy that runs it, and she sits right across the office from me, so I'll go have that conversation with him. And so they didn't find out about this until the first student or first couple students signed up for it, but one called the help desk, and you're like, what? And then you probably called support, and then we said, go look in the Message Center.
We had seen the Message Center, and y'all said it was coming, but it was one of those deals where y'all just flipped the switch, and our students knew before we did, because even in our Message Center, I don't know that it told us that it was turned on that day.
Got it. And we didn't do any special marketing to students to say, hey, it's here. It's not like there was any magic, so they just happened to find it.
Well,
so.
Most of them were robot. We think most of the accounts were connected to created their robot account because our email addresses are public.
Yep.
In that domain.
But at the same time, I hear the underlying thing. There was change, and from an IT admin standpoint, you weren't completely prepared to adapt to that change.
I prefer that if you're going to give us the ability to turn it off, turn it off and then give us the ability to turn it on.
Got it. Yeah.
That's the way I would prefer.
This was our business strategy in this particular case was opposite of that, but I totally hear what you're saying there.
It terrifies me.
Yeah. Any other comments around change and communications? I'm very confident this conversation right here on this specific issue is, like, you could probably replicate it to different scenarios in different ways, but question.
So question around the like iOS admin alert app and Radius and those types of apps, are they, how much are they tunable now today to clear out some of the clutter because that's a pretty monitor solution so you don't go home and just turn it off to the user, right? So I'm just curious to know what advancements you can make with those. Can you feed off the Message Center, et cetera?
Yeah, I honestly, I'm not an expert on Iridius that partners use to look at, you know, their customers and so forth to understand what their Message Center shows. So I don't think I'm a great person, but I don't think there's anyone specifically on Iridius here, but let's chat offline if they ask the experts. I can take a couple questions and get your email and follow up. When something changes with Iridius? Okay. All right. Now for the fun stuff, to talk about service incidents, service impacting events. So we're going to talk about our approach with service health and continuity, what we do in this life cycle of an outage and what you guys should be doing also, and just to help you understand the tools and resources. It is what it is. We've been doing Office 365 for a while. We've had a number of outages, probably way more than you probably see because they don't really impact you on a daily basis, but might be a small set of users here, a small set of users there. We've gotten really good at how we are managing our system and when there is an outage and what we do. So what I wanted to talk about first is just at a high level, step back. Martin Booth talked a bit about this morning in different areas, but just looking at service continuity in Office 365, breaking it up into these boxes, redundancy, like it's just a basic thing. When you're building on premises, obviously you want to have redundant copies. Maybe you're using RAID, maybe you're, you know, you have multiple data centers, maybe whatnot. But what does that mean? We, from a physical standpoint, we have multiple data centers around the world. You saw the slide about what that map looks like in the US. San Antonio, Chicago, Washington, Virginia, and what do you have, Wyoming coming on, Cheyenne coming on there. So we have multiple data centers in the US, but worldwide, we're just there. From a data perspective, we replicate data. Like even with Exchange, we have, I believe, 4 copies of your email spread across, some within the data center. You know, if this drive fails, it'll just fail over to this other availability group and bring your mailbox up on that. But we also have resiliency or redundancy across data centers. So where there may be an earthquake in Washington that affects the Quincy data center, it'll replicate and fail over to, let's say, San Antonio or Chicago or whatnot. So we don't want one big major disaster impacting your entire experience on Office 365. From a functional standpoint, we really think about online and offline mode. So you have Outlook. You're able to sync your email down offline. If there is an outage, you can still write emails. You can still read emails. It just won't be able to send back and forth. So that's important from a redundancy perspective, being able to sync OneDrive documents to your local machine, things like that. But where redundancy helps with your recovery point, having resiliency helps with the recovery time, being able to fail over to that other location quickly, and being able to have active load balancing. So when your email does fail and it is brought up on another database over in this DAG, that your Outlook connection is able to connect through the CAS server and be able to pull up and point to the right mailbox in the right location instantaneously. I believe Scott Schnoll has a whole session on that if you really want to get into the nuts and bolts. But us being able to be very resilient if there is a failure in one place, that it's brought up quickly in another location. Having distributed workloads, we don't want one workload failure bringing down all of Office 365. So we design where we can and isolate workloads as much as possible. And as we have an outage and we learn about the root cause of that outage and how we could have prevented that outage, if we see that there is a single point of failure, we're going to work to build and change the architecture so that it is not, that it is completely isolated. We don't want one partner's application connected to Office 365 bringing down all applications working against Office 365, that kind of construct. So we compartmentalize and isolate components as much as possible. Moving down into the bottom right corner, just working to standardize hardware and just having some very basic things where we are regimented in building a scalable cloud environment, something that is manageable by us is greatly simple. You know, we just need to simplify that, automate as the deployment as much as possible. You saw the screenshots Martin showed this morning where it's literally just another crate just comes and just gets put on and just plug it in and now it's online. It's like the Borg collective kind of, but okay, talking about predictability and inspectability, we want to avoid problems as much as possible. It's only an issue when the end user experience is impacted. So as we automate and we have monitoring and things like that that look for, we see messages starting to back up in a queue, that's a signal to us that there could be a bigger, more systemic problem. These are things that we're looking at all the time, where this messages backing up may only impact a small group of users. We can go and fix that proactively through automation, whatever the case may be on that issue, to resolve itself before the problem even happens. And that takes care of a lot of potential issues that we're still looking at these things ongoing and looking to improve the service. And where possible, the last possible resort, we bring humans in to actually help resolve these things. We do, like Martin went through on this slide to talk about DevOps model. Our developers, the engineers who built the product, are the ones that are actually solving these problems. They're on call in the middle of the night. They get pulled in. Whenever there's a big outage, it's like a military war room, you know. It's like all these hundreds of people come on a link call bridge, and you know, we're going over and we're talking. There are people with very specific responsibilities to manage the incident. The engineer that's actually working on it, somebody representing engineering to, you know, report back on what's going on there. So we know what's going on minute by minute, and we're updating the service help dashboard as actively and quickly as we possibly can. I'll show the service help dashboard in a minute if the network's working okay. So anyway, those on-call engineers are actually in the product group, so building the service. But then gray skies come. Service incidents are reality. There's going to be an outage. It's not about when it's going to happen or if it's going to happen. It's when it's going to happen. It's going to be how do we act and what are our processes like, and can you trust us to be doing the right thing to get you up and running? We know that your CEO does not have email right now, and you're used to turning knobs and pulling tape from backup and putting them in and getting everything back up. Now you feel like you're sitting on your hands while we're trying to go through and get email back up and running. So the question is, what are we doing for you? As we look at the service incident lifecycle, three basic phases. Things are working in the green, things are not working in the red, and then things are recovered in the blue as you work your way back to the green mode again. So I'm going to just touch base on all three of these, and we're going to talk about what your responsibilities are during each of these phases. And while I'm in them, I'll touch on what we do as well. Okay, when looking at a normal operating environment, really just kind of stay in tune. Look at the service health dashboard on a regular basis. I'll talk about it in a minute, but we do have APIs and the Service System Center Operations Manager for Office 365, where you can build automation with your tools and so forth to monitor the system self dashboard as well. But just kind of see what's going on. Keep a pulse. I'm just saying, like, when there's an outage, you know what you need to do to talk to your users in your organization to let them know, hey, there's an outage, we're actively working on this, you know, it's going to be ready, resolved, hopefully quickly, I can't give you an ETA, I'll let you know when I know something, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You have a plan on how you communicate this to your users' base. We also have the Office 365 admin app for Android, iOS, and Windows phones, where you can install and you can basically log in and see the service health dashboard from your phone. It is a pull mechanism like you were referencing in the back earlier, but it is a great way where you can stay in touch with what's on the service health dashboard. How many of you have installed that mobile app? Have installed it at least once? Okay. Yeah, we've gotten a lot of feedback on it. We know we can make some improvements there, and we're looking at that. It basically is the service health dashboard and plan maintenance windows that you get to see what's going on in there. Okay, jumping forward, when an actual incident happens, there's an outage. I think the last mega one, not including talking about the Azure one, what was that, 2 weeks ago, where thankfully I was in in Cabo, sitting on a beach. But this was the share. I think there was a SharePoint issue in September, if I'm not mistaken. Those of you on SharePoint. Anyway, there was. You know, these things do happen. We do have everyone on deck for it. But yeah, continue to check the service status on the system health service health dashboard. You can see where we're at. Likely, we know about the issue before you do, so you can see what we see as the issue. If our status isn't jiving, if we're saying, hey, all things are green, everything's looking good, you know, now's the time you might want to connect with your account manager, if you have one, a partner that you work with, if they're helping manage Office 365. Pick up the phone, call support. You can even open a web incident through support to submit an incident to help us know. But likely, we probably know about it if it's big enough. And you know, just start engaging internal stakeholders. You know, people inside your organization. Let them know. Keep them abreast. You might have your own war room inside your company where you're there available to help communicate when you know something. So I'm going to jump and talk about what we're doing and what our policies and our communication notification system looks like. So step one, something happens. Something blew up. Something's broken. Users cannot get access to whatever service that may be. We're going to immediately go into the service health dashboard for that specific row or line item. We're going to change that to, say, investigating. It's not a lot of information for you guys to go on, but at least you know something's going on. And that's kind of what's important here. We're looking at something, and we know what's going on, and we don't have a lot of information yet. So what we're going to do is we're going to continue to troubleshoot. We have, like I said, all hands on deck. We have a war room. The people are called in out of bed if needed. And we're actually going through and actively looking at this and updating the status of that outage when we have more information. And we keep doing that until that service is restored. Once we do resolve that issue, we do put a closure summary in the service health dashboard in that incident issue. We'll tell, hey, here's what the issue was, here's what the impact was, here's what the root cause was. Very basic. It's probably text-wise, probably about this. I guess that's 1024 by 760. No, I'm joking. And then within 5 days, usually just a couple days later, if it's a significant issue, we will do a post-incident report. It's a meatier document, couple pages long. I'll have some screenshots of one in just a second, where it actually goes into more detail about what happened, what root cause, what Microsoft is going to be doing differently as a result of this, you know, and that kind of detail. Any questions on this notification process? Talking about our policies, what our principles are here. We want to be timely as quick as possible, get notification that there isn't, we know of an outage, and update as quickly as possible, because minutes are hours for you guys. We want to target. We're able to target in the service health dashboard two very specific tenants. If this is 100 users in database or server disk X in the Quincy data center, but it's only ends up being like three people in your organization that are part of that group, we'll still communicate. Just, you know, we can let your organization know. Some users in your company may be impacted. Thank goodness we don't have all the users in your company in a single disk, in a single data center. We're spread out to minimize that risk. Want to be as accurate in our desk messages as possible. That makes sense. And just being flexible. We don't always talk about outages inside the message center, but sometimes we do. We do have a 99.9% financially backed uptime SLA, where, you know, when there's an outage, we'll reimburse at the end of a month. If we go below, which I'll talk about what those numbers look like in just a little bit. But sometimes we'll even proactively, if it was a significant issue, we'll proactively post a message in the message center saying, hey, we know something just happened. We're going to proactively reimburse you for X outage or whatever. And so just be on the lookout for that. So we do have other ways that we can be flexible and communicate to customers. And again, there is an API where you can automate and pull and read what's going on the service health dashboard and put into your on-prem systems. So end-to-end, just our service incident toolkit. We have our service health dashboard, which I have not shown you yet. We have our message center, a post-incident review, which I'll show you in just a moment. We have our admin mobile app. Those are our basic channels to communicate on when there's an outage. Some other possible channels, we may use the community. If it's a pretty touchy, hairy issue, we have definitely, I think the September SharePoint issue, we actually, our Corp Vice President, Rajesh Jha, he actually wrote a blog or a post and we put it on the community just saying, hey, apologies for this. We do have our IT Pro Network. It's a great place to stay in touch with anything going on. There's an outage or a change, likely another IT pro is saying, hey, something new has been added to Office 365. Here's what it is. Anyone else see it? Or there's an outage. Does anyone else see it? It's a pretty active group. Twitter, we don't use all the time for all outages, but sometimes we do hit it. And then we also, if the portal itself is down, we do have status.office365.com as kind of like a emergency broadcast service. Okay, and let me just see if the... How many have been in the Service Health dashboard, are familiar with it? Okay, I'll just do a quick run through, and if this takes more than a minute, then which it looks like it will.
Is there any questions? Way to make a group type, like there's a global admin and all of that, for just a monitoring team, but they need no other access except for the service?
Yeah, so the general question is, can I have a role-based access group where I assign just service incident admins to be able to see that portal? We don't have, it's a great request, but we did, we now have released the API for Office 365 that you can build your own if you want. So yeah, there's the Service Center Operations Manager for Office 365 where you also have that. So while we don't have that in the portal itself, you have other ways to get it. Other questions, and this looks like it's not coming up. Okay, so just a couple things on the Service Health dashboard. You can see back 30 days for outages. The outages or the groups are broken up by workload, so you'll see identity, Exchange, SharePoint, et cetera, et cetera. And even within those, you can see different aspects. So with Exchange, you can see client connectivity. You can see mail flow and so forth. So we'd be able to tie an outage just to, or a service incident just to, like let's say mail flow for Exchange. You can see it back 30 days. When you click on an outage, there's different icons that help signify what status it's in, investigating, service restored, restoring service. So there's just different icons that help us signify what's going on. After it's resolved, you'll see a little exclamation point that'll help you know something did happen a couple days ago, and you can go back and look at the details of that. Here's the a brief look at the mobile app. So like I said, you can see with the Service Health dashboard if the services are green or not green. And you can get to plan maintenance and stuff like that as well. Available across Windows, iOS, and Android.
Hey,
We do have an API available for the Service Health Dashboard, so you can get everything. You can build your own. And we also have the System Center Operations Manager pack, management pack that you can, if you use SCOM, and then you can load it up there as well. Yeah, here we go. So here's the general look at the API. I mean, blogs.office.com. On July 29th, 2014, we released the new admin tools and capabilities, so you can go check that out. I'm not a developer, so. All right, lastly, after the incident, we release a PR, not all the time, but generally, and so you can review the PR, you want to understand what's going on, what Microsoft is doing differently. Like I said, we don't like outages. It's money for us, so and a customer experience for you guys. So whatever we can do to help reduce the impact and isolate that workload and stuff so it doesn't happen or isn't as big, we don't want to have these outages, and so we're learning from every single one of them. Look at your internal processes. Where you can change your internal processes, maybe to help you communicate to your end users, you should do that and look at it just like we do for each incident. And keep giving us feedback and suggestions. Okay. All right, here's a quick look at the, and I know we're just about out of time here, the post-incident review on the left. We do, and I've touched on that, but in the middle, we have monthly reviews with our execs, our vice presidents, where we're going over every single outage that happened in that month, what we learned about it, what we're doing differently. So while each PR actually helps us, you know, isolates itself per incident, we look at it collectively. We may see that change that we implement where we just rolled it out, but the change is actually causing a problem doing X. Did that happen 5 times this month? Okay, we need to look at how we're rolling out change to the service. Like these are the types of things that we look at on a monthly basis and look for improvements. Okay, and then we just improve our cadence each time. Couple of quick sides left that we do have. Communicate on what our outage time is and reimbursement. It's 99.9% financially backed uptime SLA. And what that SLA looks like, it's taking the user minutes minus the downtime minutes divided by the user minutes and multiplying it by 100 to get you that. If you have 1,000 users in your organization but only 100 users are having an incident, we look at what the 1,000 users' total minutes for the month was, you know, 30 days, 24 hours a day, 60 minutes in an hour. And then we look at the outage. Let's say it's Exchange and it was out for an hour, you know, and then we do it that way. Then the actual credit that comes back to you, you know, if we drop below 99.9% for the month, and by the way, just because there's one outage, we don't just reimburse right away. We wait till the end of the month because this is a monthly uptime. So, you know, if there were multiple outages, we want to make sure we get the math right one time instead of nickel and diming. So if it's less than 99.9%, 25% service credit, under 99%, 50% service credit, and then if it's under 95%, God forbid, it's 100%. And what we do publicly communicate on our trust center is what our global availability is. And generally, I think, and we do it on a quarterly basis at this point in time, is 99.96 usually is where I've seen it quarter over quarter. It might have fluctuated to 9.4 or 9.8. But worldwide, we're doing good. But I just know when an outage happens, it just seems like really big at that moment for your organization. Okay, similar summary to the change comms, you know, just kind of understanding what we offer or what we do from a service incident standpoint, knowing where, what role you have in this and how you need to educate and help communicate to your user base, and just seeing all the tools available to you and helping provide feedback for us. Okay, so there was that graphic. I'm just gonna leave it right here. There's a couple other slides. I know we're about out of time. I do want to leave time for questions that but are more on the adoption and usage. It's like one sliders on tools and resources. But what questions, comments? That's where I'm at here. Service management, talked about change communications, and talked about how we manage service incidents. And hope you got a lot out of it. I know it was a bit high level at times. I'm going to be over at the Ask the Experts. If there were specific incidents that you'd like to chat about, I'd be happy to. But I'm happy to take questions now. All right. Time. Thank you, guys. Have a great day.